There was a certain old sailor, however, who scoffed at all claims of the ship's speed, and who even refused to believe the record that she was making from day to day. 23 days is the best she will do, he vowed over and over again. I will stake a year's pay on it that she can't make an hour less. Yet on the 19th day of their passage, a warm, gusty afternoon of early May, it was he who came himself to the captain, round-eyed with amazement, to report, "There's land been sighted, sir, and I don't understand it at all. It looks like Gibraltar." So she came through the gates of the Mediterranean, a gentle breeze behind her, sails all filled and asleep, as the seaman said, a swift, slender hull under a cloud of snowy canvas. She pushed into the straits where had sailed back and forth the daring Phoenician vessels, the Roman galleys, and the high-decked ships of Venice and of Spain, but she was no lesser vessel than any of them, for she was the first of the Yankee clipper ships. But that was only a trial, Humphrey kept saying, when we were learning to handle her. On the voyage home, we'll show you even more plainly what she can do. Setting a record for the return voyage. That voyage was now soon to be, for the vessel had been selected to carry back the Commodore's messages and reports to Washington from Tripoli. On the day before she was to sail, a message came from the ruler of Tripoli that he was sending his personal agent, an Arab, to make the ship a friendly visit of farewell. Captain Reynolds sighed deeply when he heard the news, for it came from a government which pretended to be very friendly, but was secretly treacherous. The stout, dusky minister of state came over the side, gorgeous in his jewels and satins, inspected the ship with solemn interest, and expressed not only surprise, but some doubts when told of the time she had made between America and Gibraltar.